Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Dr. Supercoach podcast. This is Chizo from the editing booth. We had some major technical difficulties during the recording of this episode, which you'll find out in just a moment. Luckily, I do have the backup audio. The backup audio is not great, but I still hope that you enjoy the episode, and hopefully everything's fixed for the next one. Enjoy. Welcome back to the Dr. Supercoach podcast. You're on once again with Chizo. Supercoach is open for 2023. We can get in there and start mucking around with our sides. This might also be the first time that you're seeing this face on camera on YouTube talking about fantasy sports for a little while anyway. With me, I've got Pistol to talk all things 2023, mate. How you going, champion?
I'm excited. This is a big step, you know. You can see our faces. I've gone out beforehand, put on a bit of fake tan. That's all you can see. You know, it's hide how pale I am. But yeah, it's very exciting times.
I actually had to change the color temperature of your lights, Pistol, just so you stood out from the background, because when it was just it was a white light and not a warm yellow light, like I've got in the background here, we actually couldn't see you. It was just like a floating head. It just disappeared into the blur there, mate. Yeah. Another big news that we've had over the off season is we finally launched drsupercoach.com.au, our merch store. If you do want to go pick up some threads, some hoodies, some caps, things like that, you can go check it out. You can't get these that we're rocking right now. This is bespoke rivalry league only. But there is some good stuff over there at drsupercoach.com.au. Go and check it out. Pistol, let's jump straight into it, mate. We've got some big changes coming to Supercoach. Obviously, we've got the additional round in 2023 with the magic round, the gather round. We're getting an extra trade this year, mate. So your little itchy trigger finger on the trade button's going to be
gone.
I'm still thrilled to announce that you were the first person to run out of boosts before we even got our hands on them last year. So that's a record that you've set originally.
Trade's gone already. So here we go. Launch day, used it.
36 trades, up from 35 last year. Pretty straightforward decision, considering that we had the extra round.
It's a fair one extra round, one extra trade. You know, it's just a solid, fair trade. I don't think there has to be any, you know, later pick swaps or anything to settle it.
Yeah. Is that going to make you a little bit more hungry to go hard with the trading early? We'll talk a little bit about the buy structure changes as well. Mm. But the additional trade, I mean, we say this every year, when you've got 35, 36 trades over the last few years, even with all the carnage that we've had, we've still found ourselves with a couple of trades to bury us, to get us out from being buried right at the end of the year. Is that just more incentive to go kind of that take value early and just churn those trades over, trying to make that cash as quick as possible?
Yeah, I think if we just, you know, have a bit of a recap from last season and look at what happened with, I guess, the successful teams, and it was a lot of value picks that were taken that went up in price. The trade boosts were used to bring in, you know, sometimes even more value, and people were really able to complete their teams, you know, exceptionally quickly. And I was thinking, well, I don't know if this is, you know, a once-off event. It could have just been a particularly good year for the mid-prices, but having an extra trade is another, you know, little helpful bailout option, you know, if things do go wrong. Just gives you that tiny bit of extra confidence that you might need to take the plunge and move towards more of, I guess, value selections in your starting team. So for me, that does impact at least a mindset shift. And, you know, if I was a bit more hesitant on moving further away from Guns and Rookies, I mean, obviously I was going to move away from it, but even further away, yeah. I think this does kind of help a little bit just with my keeping me calm.
And I think I've been pretty vocal about the fact that I feel like my starting squad last year, my strategy of trying to avoid those trap kind of players that had the high risk definitely didn't suit the new rules last year, and it took, you know, the entire season for me to kind of claw my way back in that respect. So it sounds like what you're saying is last year was, it really affirmed in your mind that those extra trades are to kind of expedite getting those players into your team and maybe even taking some extra risk in terms of some of those mid prices and those 350 to 400k yep. players we ordinarily would avoid. You're more inclined to take those because that you may only need 80 to 100k to make that trade worthwhile, given that they're probably going to score more points.
And even with the boosts as well, Chizo, I mean, it'll be more like, hey, you know, this guy might be only 400k, who's pumped out, you know, 300s in a row. I'm talking specifically about Darcy Cameron last year. I looked at him and I was like, well, it's Darcy Cameron. Is he really going to keep up 100 average for the rest of the season? And he almost did from that point onwards. I think it was 97 or so. So if you see those value options appear compared to last year, where we were, I think, a little gun shy of jumping on those types of plays because historically, you know, it hasn't worked out super well, just with the additional trades. And if I can keep my upgrade cadence, you know, I can downgrade and upgrade, and then I can just boost and also sideways trade a rookie to a Darcy Cameron and just like have a free shot at a potential premium. I think, you know, strategically, that's what I'm going to move towards this season, and an extra trade obviously will help with that.
Yeah, obviously we've got some other changes in terms of the Supercoach site getting a revamp and a lot of new rules, and I'm sure the draft docs will talk about a lot of the Keeper League stuff that has been completely almost built up from scratch, the amount of changes that have been happening over there, which are going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to The next big change that we've got this season because of the additional round is we've got four bye rounds this year. Pistol, we've got 12, 13, 14, and 15 this year. Mm-hmm. Now, the first thing that stands out to me, apart from the fact that we've got four of them, is that round 15 is when I kind of, I'm done. You know, my team's done.
Should and be earlier, Chizo.
Now I've got six teams that are going to be missing that round. So, like, Are we delaying trying to, you know, if I go through the buys to begin with, round 12 we've got the Lions, Dockers, Saints and Swans. Round 13 we've got the Suns and the Cats. Round 14 Crows, Magpies, Bombers, Hawks, D's and Eagles. And round 15, super fantasy relevant this year, we've got the Blues, Giants, Roos, Port Power, Tigers and the Bulldogs. Yeah. There's easily five or six players in terms of top-end premiers that we could have in our sides, even to begin the year from those. Are these buyers changing the way that you're thinking about making your starting squad at all?
A little. More than probably previous years. I think you have to consider that we're going to finish our teams earlier, as we did last year for the first time, you know, with all these boosts. We got our teams done much more quickly. And that meant we didn't have, I guess, the luxury of upgrading a rookie to a premium, you know, in the final round of the bye or you know, taking advantage of players coming off their bye because our teams were done. So we didn't need to do that. I think I used the least amount of trades I've ever used through the byes last season because my team was done and I wasn't really. I was like, oh, I guess I'll trade Grundy out when he was injured. But outside of that, there was no real, I think it was, you know, all the ruckman merry-go-round, but outside of those injuries, I wasn't actively, you know, making my team any better through upgrading and downgrading. So this year, looking at it, I think there's opportunities to select players that are in that ladder buy rounds, particularly from GWS and North Melbourne, these mid prices, where I would feel comfortable holding on to them only as long as you need to, right? Like, if you don't need to hold them all the way to round 15, if you get to round 13 and you're like, well, they're the last two players in my side, I could upgrade them or hold them to their buy. No, I'll just use a boost if I need to, or just trade them out for round 12 premiums who have just played, because the round 12 premiums are also really good. So if I'm trading in Jack Steele after his buy, and I'm trading out, you know, a Tom Green or an LDU who have the final buy, I mean, to me, that sounds like a fantastic idea. So when I'm looking for those mid prices, I'm looking at those mid prices that have the later buy rounds, unless they're, you know, if they're going to be exceptional, I'm going to pick them regardless of their buy rounds. But if I'm on the fence and choosing between two, which I am in the midfield, or choosing between three, you know, I'm taking the ones with that later buy round just for that reason.
Something you mentioned in there, so like the whole thesis around that is picking someone later on because they've got more time to appreciate, and then because they were the last buy round, you can flick them to someone else who's coming off the buy. We've now got three sets of buyers of players that will be coming off. Another thing that has just kind of clued onto me is we're used to having sort of round 14, like a lot of the rookies, we kind of get pinched, and we'd love to have them for like an extra fortnight to make that final bit of cash to help us upgrade our sides. And we feel like, you know, round 10 or 11, we're suddenly downgrading people that, you know, we otherwise wouldn't have. It's almost like having those 12 teams from round 14 onwards having the buy, we've actually got some extra weeks to use in terms of rookies generating that cash. So our hands may not be as forced to make trades like in that 10-11 in preparation of building the war chest. I think that's actually probably going to be beneficial to us as well.
That's a really good point, Chizo. I didn't consider that. I think now that round 13 only has Geelong and Gold Coast, there's not a necessity to upgrade that week if you don't need to. You can hold the rookies that round because realistically you're going to have one, maybe two premiums from Geelong and Gold Coast combined, and therefore if you're going to have a full 22 players and you're playing some rookies, I mean, you're going to have four chances before they drop out of your, you know, best 18. It's unlikely you're going to get five bad scores, you know, touch wood. But I've jinxed it now, I've ruined the whole thing.
You've been doing this for years and you're not learning.
But, you know, I think you can hold on the extra week and make that little bit more cash. I mean, last season's situation, I think going into the buys was around that many people traded out Nick Daicos, and then he just exploded throughout the buys. And if you knew that you just had to make it through the round 12 and then round 13 was going to be easy, maybe you would have just held him for that extra 1 week.
Yeah, exactly.
He scores 140 and next thing you know, you've got a 5-round average of 120 or whatever he had in that period of time. So, yeah, geez, I think that's very possible that happens and does make a difference in how we play, you know, rookies through the buys and our cash gen and all of it. Interesting.
And I think it's also important to mention, we can say now that it's going to be best 18 for all the buy rounds. So there's been a bit of curiosity about whether round 13 is going to be still best 22 because we're only missing two teams. It's definitely going to be best 18 for all the buy rounds. So early on, there's only four teams and then two teams to begin the buy rounds. There's every chance that we're not going to be as hard hit in terms of the players that we're losing and sort of forced into making these moves that we're talking about that we otherwise would have had to do. So that's super interesting. In terms of the AFL, in terms of rule trades, we've now got the fifth bench player, the tactical sub, Pistol. I want to know your thoughts on that first, and then I want to hear your super coach intuition and where that's leading you.
I'm thankful that the AFL made it a tactical sub because I always thought it was silly that, you know, one team could technically be using it tactically. I'm sure we all know of an AFL team that used the sub a lot more than all of the other AFL teams. And it seemed tactical. And then the other team just like couldn't sub. I always thought it would make sense. Like if one team uses their sub, then the other team should be able to use theirs you know, irregardless if they had an injury, just so that, you know, if you bring on fresh legs, the other team bring on fresh legs, so they're not, you know, advantaged by it. So I'm all for the rule. I think it makes it's just a very fair change compared to what it was. And also it brings out more strategies of, you know, what sort of teams are the AFL teams going to bring on game day? You know, how are they going to bring now two ruckmen? I mean, I'm going to delve straight into the Supercoach part of it, but...
What, as a sub?
No, I think they will bring two ruckmen into a game, not as a sub.
Oh, right.
They'll use two and sub out one of them, earlier in the game, you know, if it's not working halftime or three-quarter time, whatever they want to risk. I think it's common. I mean, a lot of teams have two ruckmen now. I mean, Fremantle probably aren't going to sub out theirs because they're both very good. Melbourne have gone...
Darcy will be injured. He'll probably get subbed anyway.
I mean, you're not speaking any lies there, but Gorn and Grundy, if Melbourne are dominating, I can see one of them just being rested for the sake of just being rested, which they haven't really had the luxury to, like, physically say, hey, Gorn, you're going to sit on the bench and you're actually not going to come back on. There's those options. Hawthorn have many rucks, too many rucks. So the teams that have, I guess, more than one ruck, Brisbane as well, they're going to play both of them, I think, and have an early sub. And on the other hand, if your team's only got one ruck, well, then have a look at the rookies that are going to be played, Chiso, because we know what happens when a rookie just is having a stinker. Sometimes there's nothing they can do to get you know, caught up in the game. They just end up flopping in the game and just looking panicked and terrible. And, hey, great, we can just sub you out. Why would you pick the best pressure, under pressure performer player?
No, he said flopping, and I was like, you know, never mind.
Come on.
I just want to go back. I heard you say irregardless, and I'm like, wait, is that a word?
Regardless,
It's a non-standard word that most people find nonsensical, but it means the same thing as regardless. So I'm going to give you a point for that. And
or minus a point, I'm not sure.
No. Which side of the fence you're nonsensical, but it's technically a word. The thing that worries me is with this extra position that we have, are we going to see it used for these young types that, you know, they might only want to get 20% game time, and then all these rookies that we're hoping are going to generate cash, and in 2 weeks' time, Finlay McRae is going to get another 30 touches and break his way in and suddenly get games. Suddenly these guys are playing 20% game time every week, and we've got all these rookies that are just generating nothing. Do you see any risk of that happening, or are they going to use that tactical sub as, you know, like a mature body that comes in to do a specific job ahead of time because they've got a tactic behind it, or they're just going to use it for young kids?
Look, it depends on the team and their depth, right? So different clubs will use it differently, but I'm less concerned about someone just subbing on every week and getting that 20% game time, because I feel like those players will kind of know not to pick. We'll say, hey, there's too much risk there. Let's probably stay away from them. I'm worried about the players that they sub off out of nowhere and completely kill their cash generation. So we're talking the Will Ashcroft type. You know, you're thinking, oh, great, you know, this guy has been born ready for AFL for the last, like, 4 years, and he's going to be playing, let's say, five games in a row, and he's scoring in the 80s, and you're like, oh, this kid's amazing. And then one day they're just like, oh, yeah, we can sub you out at halftime just for a rest. We're doing well. And then all of a sudden he scored, like, 25, and he's – cash gen's dead for the next, like, 3 weeks, and he's lost 50k, and you're like, well, he was a you know, I wanted to upgrade him, and, you know, now I can't take my investment out and just have to hold him for an extra period of time. So even though, and when you're picking more mid prices, there's risks with all the mid prices that they might be the sub. Well, maybe not all of them, but some of them. I mean, people are hot on Taron Thomas and Flanders, and I mean, Taron Thomas wasn't even the best 22 last year, and now they've added in more players, and now he's going to be best 22 because he had a position change. But what if he's bad in one of the games and he's, like, still fringe 22? I mean, he could definitely be subbed out if he's gone quiet. I mean, unfortunately for him, he had, what, 3 touches in a game once? What do you think happens at halftime when he's sitting on 2 touches? He's probably getting subbed out. He doesn't get that third touch, Chiso.
I know exactly what you're talking about, is that. And this is something that I had to think about, because it's been a few years since we've had to worry about this, is when we had the green and red vest, you know, scenario, is even back then when it was first brought in, there was a little bit of gamesmanship going around when someone was playing really badly, that, oh, suddenly we're injured and they get subbed. Now there's nothing standing in the way of being like, Pistol, you suck in the forward line, you suck in the back line, you suck in the midfield. Put the red vest on and we'll get a good player to come in. They've got that. Every single game of every round has that potential now. Yep. And I think, not that it's going under the radar, but I just feel like we need to be cognizant that it's going to happen.
You love
way, way more than we're probably giving it credit for, because it's going to happen. Players are going to be having an absolute stinker and they're going to be, you're out.
I think it might impact some. So we had some like sneaky good forward rookies last year, and I think if you look at the, I guess, size profile of some of these rookies, I mean, like Jack Hayes is a big boy, but even if you look smaller, like much smaller, we had a couple of the North Melbourne forward pockets. Like any of those guys, if they didn't get the, you know, obviously if they were named in the squad and they were playing, then we're like, oh, okay, like maybe they need to kick a goal or two to be able to score a 60 or 70 and increase their price. But once you know they were named, there wasn't that risk that they were going to be like subbed out unless they were injured. So now I got to think, well, if I'm picking a North Melbourne forward pocket, it's possible it gets to half time, they haven't got a sniff, the ball's not even gone there, and they just sub them off because they can. And that wasn't a risk in the last couple of years. So even though they were like, I guess, like, you know, quotation mark, dodgier picks because you're picking the worst team in the competition last year's small forward, you at least knew they were going to play the whole game. Now I can't even guarantee that when I'm picking these small forwards from these clubs that don't score many goals. So there's more risks in those clubs. And the reason I mentioned Jack Hayes, obviously it goes the same way. Your 190 plus guys might come in for their first game, not get anywhere near it, and also then be subbed out. Yeah. I think that's the higher chance, really, if they're not getting into it at all, which there wasn't last year. So there's a lot of increased risk in a lot of these rookie picks. It's going to be about choosing the right rookies at the right time, and it's a bit scary, Chase.
I've just had a brainwave.
I know.
About what the worst situation is.
Okay.
One of these rookies we desperately don't want to get subbed, getting subbed for one of our rookies that is the sub. And so we have sub squared in terms of I'm trademarking that sub squared, you know. So when it happens in round one, sub squared happened.
Not picking any rookies from the same team. That's how I'm avoiding it. It'll never happen to me that way.
Oh no, that's cool. I think that's a really good breakdown on what could potentially impact Supercoach in terms of the tactical sub that we're calling it now.
Mm.
We talked about some of the players that we liked in December when the team picker first came out. I know some of the names that you really, really were keen on. Have any of those changed in the last month? Now that we're getting some preseason form, we're getting some injury reports, players are playing in different positions. Have you gone away from your original thinking? Because I was surprised when I looked at, because I've saved a screenshot of my team when I first opened, and I've looked at it now, and yes, there's some different names, but structures, For better or worse, pretty similar.
I feel like I've kept my structure, but my names on my page have been shuffled a lot since the launch. If you want me to name specific names, I think during the launch, I had LDU as my only, alongside Hopper, but I take that one for granted, as my like cheaper premium. But as we've gone, you know, the last couple of weeks, I've looked at that, I guess, market, that price range, and seen that there's, you know, Cornelio, Noah Anderson, Ben Keys, Jaden Short, you know, what happens if he goes back, Tom Green, Chad Warner, I guess you've got Butters as well if you're not starting in the forward line. And
I don't know Butters.
And Tom,
of having Butters?
No, Tom Mitchell as well. And all of them are in that same price range. And I just thought to myself, like, look, one of them's doing well for sure, right? Like, I'd be shocked if all of them did badly. Like, one's breaking out and doing well, so I need to have at least one slot. I'm like, that's a lot of names for only one to do well. Probably two are going to do well, to be honest. And I took out one of my premium midfielders, McRae, actually. Chizo, surprised because I was really hot on him. But I've taken out McRae and I've put in Tom Green just to take advantage of that price point. I have two players in that price range. And that's so that I have that flexibility to jump on any of these guys if they have a fast start. I know last season what hurt me was I had the top end premium midfielders last year, and then when Cripps was banging out those big scores, it was really hard for me to be able to shift my team around and get him in, because for me to get him in, realistically, it would have required me to do like a Tuk Miller or maybe a McRae down to Cripps. And that's a huge call to make at like round two, because who would do that?
Sample size is too small to do something like that.
Yeah, that's right. And then, you know, I didn't get him. And I was like, oh boy, he's averaging 140 and I still don't have him in my side. I'm going to have to get him now, you know, 530K or whatever it is. And it just not having that flexibility at that price points was really punishing. So this year I'm looking at those players, and to be fair, last year I didn't like any of those players in the price point. I guess you could say Cripps was a win, but I don't know if there was any other massive wins at that price range. I mean, Tom Green was okay. He really wasn't, you know, a huge win, but this year I'm pretty
confident. Your tune from round 10 last year, let me say. Your tune on Tom Green in 2022 has changed a little bit. Let's say that.
God. Okay, yeah. Well, it probably doesn't help me that I went with Tom Green over Cripps after round 1. And then was like, what do I do? My midfield's almost complete and I don't have a spot for Cripps. And then I was, you know, chasing tail that whole time. But looking at those names, I feel pretty confident that more than one is going to be very good. I'm leaving myself the flexibility by choosing two that I can adapt and I can be quick at getting the ones that are flying. And, you know, if that is a forward like a Butters or a Cornelio, great, that's fine. I'll get them and I'll hold them in my midfield until I can, you know, flick them forward. And that is a reason, Chizo, that I really wanted to say, because I've seen a lot of teams, and this is something that has been, I guess, worrying me. There will be DPP changes.
Yeah.
We can't forget there's going to be changes. Last season, Libba, Bont, Parker, all of these guys, top tier forwards. I mean, Bailey Smith was there until he was, you know, injured, suspended, whatever. But think about how happy we are as a whole of the forwards. I mean, people, you're locking in Dunkley, that's fine. And then people are locking in, you know, Taranto or Rosie, Cornelio, Butters, whatever it is. That's a lot of forwards already. So if you're like me and you're looking at your forward line, you're like, okay, I've got a Dunkley, I've got a Rosie, I've got a Taranto. Maybe you have a Darcy Cameron in your ruck line. Okay, that's four. Now I'm leaving myself LDU and Tom Green in midfield. And what if the two mid prices that absolutely burst out, Butters and Cornelio, I can get them. But that's six, Chizo. That's my forward line done. And DPP changes haven't been factored in. Yeah. So I think it's just something that we need to remember going into the season, that we don't want to commit, like overcommit to our forward line premiums this early.
Yeah.
Like we want to be able to take advantage when, you know, the opportunities arise. I'm pretty scared looking at a lot of teams that are seeing, you know, four premiums. I see a Dunkley, a Cornelio, Taranto, and then a Port Boy forward line often. And then I see Cameron in the ruck and I'm like, oh boy, what are you doing here? Because your forward line's nearly set and there's going to be DPP changes. And that screams to me as a mistake. So I definitely wanted to identify that this early in the preseason so we don't all get caught up making, you know, our teams and not thinking that through. So sorry for the rant, Chizo.
I love your rants, mate. I think what you said is completely on par with what you came up with last year as well. Like it was one of the things I think I vaguely remember you like making an argument. What if Max Gawn became got forward status if Jackson took off, you know, like there are things that you just can't account for, but you can factor in almost like a stress relief valve, let's call it, that break glass in case of emergency situation.
Yep.
But you can't do that if you've clogged up one of your lines. I think over the last probably 3 weeks, particularly in Slack, it's transitioned from everyone definitely starting like four forward premiums, and I'm sitting here thinking like, I get that's where the premiums are compared to, let's say, the back line, Yeah. There's probably not the four or five absolute standout options that you wish you could start as opposed to the forward line, but that doesn't necessarily mean you have to clog it up.
Yeah.
So I think what you're saying there is completely spot on, but we will still be dictated by rookies. We'll still be dictated by injuries and preseason form and stuff like that. And so we might end up having three definitively in the forward line, and then maybe a breakout option, like let's say Fife, for example, gets announced he's playing midfield all of a sudden. I can see an argument for putting a player like that in four, but I really don't want to go into the season with four plus another swing I know is destined to end up in the forward line. So I think that's really, really important. In terms of specific players,
yeah,
you mentioned.
I didn't answer your question, did I?
I know you talked about LDU being the first cab off the rank. I've got to say, he was one that I probably didn't pay enough attention to last year. Like, I remember everyone saying, oh, this is going to be his breakout year. And I remember kind of mid-year, he was just, you know, ambling along doing 80s and 90s from memory. But his end of the season, I think after the bye, he had maybe one sub turn when he got attention against maybe the Bombers. So I can absolutely see him being their number one midfielder. So I can absolutely see where that came from. I know with all the departures, I can see Tom Green being another mid for the Giants. A bunch of these, and even with Tom Mitchell, like he didn't have the role that he had last year, like that he's had in previous years. He goes to the Pies. Is he suddenly going to be played as a on-ball midfielder predominantly compared to his flank type role? There's absolutely an argument for four or five of these guys being the breakout. And I like that you said that you've left two spots in there as opposed to getting an uber premium, because you know whatever one is going to be the breakout is going to be a 115 plus this year, and you want to get on it.
Yeah, I think there's a very conservative look at these mid prices at the moment. What I see online, a lot of people are, I guess, being somewhat instructed to choose just one of them as the risk is too high. But and whilst I would generally agree with that, because that's, you know, the stock standard year in, year out, it's just this particular year there's more options than previous years, and people often forget that you can trade a midfielder in for that spot. So we're talking, you know, the Canelio, because I mean, it's very possible Canelio is the standout GWS midfielder as well, and you can trade them to, you know, the midfielders to those forwards. So there's many, many good options, more than honestly, more than I can remember in any year in like the last decade in that price range. So
yeah,
I feel comfortable choosing two. I mean, honestly, three might even work if you get lucky. I think that's just like one step too far for me. But if the winner at the end of the year started with three of them, I also would not be surprised, because they're good players, really good players in that price range. But Chizo, to answer your question about players that have come in, come out, there's been minor movement. I think the biggest one is Fife has fallen out just based on him playing, you know, as a pure forward so far in the preseason. So he's dropped out of my initial side. I think Marshall has come back into my side. I think it's looking more and more clear that despite their forward line woes, it's not Marshall's role to fill it. It looks like Campbell's injured himself. So they don't really have other ruck options. They kind of have other forward options, whilst, you know, King seems a little bit ahead of his recovery as well. So I'm feeling okay with Marshall, and it saves a little bit of money over someone like English or Witts. So you can bank that and spend it on a mid-pricer. What I did with that money specifically is went down back and upgraded Mr. Liam Jones, who was more of a placeholder at that time, and upgraded him to Yeo, who is getting that midfield training time. Doesn't really mean that he won't get injured in the first 15 minutes of the first round, but I at least like where it's heading. I mean, we're quick to forget because it's been a long time, Chizo, but prime Yeo was a bloody good footballer, and he averaged, you know, 115 odd in Supercoach, and he is listed as a defender. So if he actually is going to play as a midfielder, that risk is, I guess, a little bit lower, but it's still there. But he can be a phenomenal footballer on his day. So for now, you know, sitting here in January, I've popped him into my side as one of my latest updates.
And you know what? You've got 8 weeks to contemplate how big a mistake that would be. Mate, in terms of players that I swapped out, my structure has been pretty much the same. A lot of the premiums that I did have are just kind of sideways in between. I've had Sicily in for bits. I've had Stewart in for a while. I've had Dawson in, and then suddenly heard that he was playing less off the halfback and more on a wing role. I was like, oh, I don't want that. So he, like, it has been a little bit of a merry-go-round. I think the important ones have been Marshall. I was actually more confident on Marshall before the injury. I forget. He was coming back from his ACL. Help me out here. Help me out.
Hayes.
Yes, that's it. Sorry. Yeah, I was more confident until he re-injured himself. So, yeah, there's certainly... I still like Tim English. I think he's going, probably not getting the love that he deserved based on how good his year was last year. Rory Lobb's already had a rolled ankle. Not supposed to be overly bad, but I see him just continuing on what his role was last year. So he's been sort of a key point of difference at R1 for me compared to a lot of the teams that I'm seeing in Slack at the moment that are going, you know, Marshall and Darcy R1, mm-hmm. R2. So that's probably the point of difference in terms of what I'm doing. I've gone Oliver, Bontempelli, McRae, LDU, Hopper as my five. I'm kind of sticking to the... I've got a leading question in a second, but I'm kind of picking the top in each line as like the solid player that I want in that line. So Oliver gives me captaincy options. He's also absolutely going to be in the top handful in terms of the midfield. And that allows me to take a little bit more risk in terms of, I think McRae without Dunkley and same with Bont, they're both going to have big upticks. I think McRae is also underpriced based on a bad year last year and a bad role. So literally all he has to do is go back into a similar role. And then you take Dunkley out. Remember he was priced with Dunkley in the team the year before. We know what you can do with Dunkley. So I have...
Upside's there, yeah.
Upside is there. Looking at me right now, do you think that you would say McRae is going to average worse than what he did last year? I probably think you wouldn't make that suggestion more than...
Yeah.
Like, it's odds on that doesn't happen. So...
Yeah. So, Chiso, I don't mean to cut you off. Just wondering, you know, it's tech issues potentially on the cards. Let's just say I forgot to delete some things on my computer before we started this podcast and I've run out of memory and my recording has stopped.
No!
Are you recording this on your end and we can still upload it, or am I going to have to start this again?
To everyone on YouTube, we're going to go to a quick ad break and we'll see you right back.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, welcome back. Pistol, the next thing that I want to do, and this is a little bit controversial, I'm going to ask you a question here. I want to know your thoughts.
Yep.
Is Guns and Rookies dead?
Yeah, I think it's dead. It's dead as the definition that we knew it. So I'm talking 13 premiums. That was the traditional Guns and Rookies was essentially 13 premiums and rookies. No mid prices at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, the general strategy there is rookies accumulate price quickly and you cull them and, you know, you upgrade, try and upgrade quickly through that because they make more money than mid prices. But that's really good when you have limited trades and you need to lock in 13 premiums to start the season, and you only have, let's say, back in the day, if even you had 20 trades, 24 trades, or even 30 trades, you know, you're more than halfway there to completing your side, where people would struggle. But with 36 trades and boosts,
yeah,
I think we can afford to take a couple more mid prices, some, you know, fewer premiums to start the season. I think there's a shift that did happen last year. We're just maybe a little bit slower to react, but we can call it early this preseason that, yeah, that 13 premium idea is dead in the water. Yeah. I think we're down to an 11 and 12 is the new template moving forward. I'd be surprised if 10, I mean, I'm sure 10 could be viable, but it feels a little less template-y. I feel like it's we're now down to 11 and 12, and that means that that's the death of guns and rookies.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, speaking of controversial opinions, Nick Daicos isn't a premium. He's expensive, but he has never been proven, Pistol, and I can see you nodding your head in agreement right now.
That's not what my reaction is, but, yeah, I mean, you can say that if you want for the podcast listeners.
I had to get that in there. The reason I bring it up, and it is certainly I agree with everything you're saying. I think the thing that I'm finding most difficult is I've had nearly a decade of playing this game this one particular way, and as much as I can break down the rules and kind of analyze it and give advice, and, you know, we're constantly, you and I, talking backwards and forwards about strategies and stuff like that. When I go and pick a side, I'm still finding myself, I've got two that I would class as mid-prices. So I've got Bose at 278, and I've got Hopper at 332. And that's it. That's pretty similar to what you'd have in a normal year. Even in 2021, when I went reasonably well, we had a couple mid prices in there, like Clark from the Cats and whatnot. So is it leading, are you looking at your side and recognizing that you need to go chase more value? You're going, oh yes, I've got like I've got Oliver, Bontempelli and McRae, and yes, they're probably slightly underpriced, but are they the value picks that we're looking for, and I should drop, like you have, McRae for agreeing that the price per point kind of ratio and relationship there is much better?
I mean, I have, so it would be hard for me like, no, don't do it, Chizo, that's terrible.
Not that one specific example, but over your whole side, are you looking going, oh, I've got Oliver, I've got McRae.
Hey, I've got Salem, Yo, Flanders.
Yeah, okay, so answering my question, you're absolutely going, this middle bracket that we've never touched with a 10-foot pole, I'm getting the ladle out and I'm scooping them all into my team.
I'm absolutely scooping. I mean, maybe not all of them. There's some that I will pass on, but I'm scooping.
And Yo,
I'm full of scoops right now.
Yeah, and Yo, you'll be pooper scooping is what you'll be doing when he's in your sight. So that sorts out really well. So I certainly think that is something that the game is definitively changed now. And as much as we want to go, how many 123,000 rookies can I stuff into my side? You throw in some of those factors that we've talked about in the tactical sub and things like that, and the guns and rookies isn't, not that it's not viable, it's definitely still, you can still make a fantastic team. I've seen some really good teams that have got 12, 13 premiums this year. But then in reflection, is it really suiting the game style that the best coaches are going to have? And we've seen AFL fantasy coaches come over to Supercoach and dominate last year using the same strategy that they've had for 4 or 5 years. I think that's an absolute flashing amber light saying, you know, pay attention.
I mean, it goes back to my experiences last year with not being able to get Crips in quickly. The same thing, Hewitt and Sicily down back. If you didn't have more than one option to drop down to, I can't remember my exact defensive structure. I think for them, off the top of my head, I went four premiums deep. I think I had Whitfield at D4, and it just meant that I couldn't really get a Sicily. I mean, I could have traded Whitfield, to be honest.
I didn't get him in the end because I couldn't.
Yeah, well, I didn't get him, and I was forced to get Hewitt in the midfield for some reason just to be able to get him in. I think it was. I can't even remember. And I then couldn't get all of the value and all the players that were absolutely flying, because I didn't have these mid prices to be able to jump easily. I had no flexibility at all. I had I stuffed my team. I think it was 12 high-end, relatively high-end premiums. You know, I guess how I thought the season would play out with the extra trade boosts was more, hey, if I take more high-end players and now I've got more trades, I'll cull the rookies more quickly and I'll be able to finish my team, you know, faster than everybody, but have high-end players compared to people not having high-end players. What happened in reality was the mid-prices scored really well, and there was many of them, and I couldn't get any of them, or barely any of them. So people finish their team. I mean, I finished like early, and putting in quotation marks, and I think I finished it like round 14, but the top teams were finished going into the buys last season.
It was crazy.
People had in the buys, they had two, the top teams literally had two premiums on the bench when they finished their team.
I genuinely remember being sent a DM on Slack, being like, oh, what should I do this week? And I'm like, what do you mean what you can do? You've got Dacos on the bench and it's round 10.
Yeah.
And he's swinging forward and back. Don't ask me.
There was teams that had Kerno at like four, when he was peaked at like 480K as F7, and then had Dacos at D9, and then had all fully premium side, like pretty much going into the buys. And I was like, oh man, how, I'm looking at my team and I've got a lot of top end premiums, which I did have. And that, you know, helped me recover towards the end of the season, because God knows I was 40K at round seven and I could, you know, close in on the 5K as the season progressed. But, you know, I was done. I was playing catch up and trading in similar players as the people at the top anyway. Like I was way too far behind by that point in time. Like the starting strategy was wrong. It just didn't play out how I thought it might. And I guess this is the year to correct and make sure that we're spot on going into the season. So we won't let that happen again.
And you know, the thing that exacerbated it is, as we've been talking about that upgrade cadence and everyone's so rapidly upgrading, that once you fell behind, you're like, oh, I need to tweak a few things to kind of get back on the same path. You were infinitely far behind. You weren't catching them. And it was, as long as you were content with waiting until round 20 to get to a rank that you were reasonably happy with, I found last year one of the hardest years to go through, because there was almost no light at the end of the tunnel, because I'd fixed one thing and everyone else was just accelerating. You know what I mean? I literally couldn't catch up.
I think the DPP changes didn't help with that. I think we got to round six and the changes came in and Parker had just banged out like a 150. So the next round, every person had to get Parker or they were going to be priced out. And that was like the really common move. He was like, I think 502K or something. He'd just gone up 30K last week. And he pretty much was a must get. So we jumped on Parker, but everyone jumped on Parker. So I'm like, okay, well, this is another round. I can't catch up on everybody because I'm getting the same. Then Bont popped out off the top of my head. It was like a 160 that week. So then I was like, oh man, I have to get Bont this week because otherwise I'm going to be priced out of Bont and Pelly. Like Parker and Bont and Pelly were the two best forwards. So you couldn't not get them. You couldn't jump somewhere else because they end up being the best players for their price and as of their position. So now it's been 2 weeks, two whole weeks where I'm falling further behind both weeks because I'm just doing the same moves as everyone else and my team is worse than other people. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, well, thank God the next, you know, positional changes are in 3 weeks' time. I've got 3 weeks to catch up. So you make those little changes in 3 weeks and then the DPP changes come in and I spend the next 2 weeks doing the same move as everyone else. The process repeats itself. If you didn't start hot and, you know, capitalize on the DPP changes, it was very hard to catch up until very late in the season.
Yeah. And look, we always laugh about you being a computer mainframe. I think we need to upgrade your RAM or your memory or something like that, Pistol, because
I was actually a generation behind. You know,
he went up 43.5K and went to 518.8K. So 502K is close.
Close.
And he did score exactly 150.
The memory is a bit foggy, but it's rough numbers, not too bad. That was the first time I thought about it since it happened. So I've got to remember that from like 9 months ago. So I'll take some credit, thanks.
Yeah, irrespective. Pistol, thanks for sitting down with me, mate. Absolutely enjoy our Supercoach conversations and talking through some strategies and stuff that we'll use in the 2023 season. If they want to find you on Twitter, where can they find you?
You can find myself at pistol_DRSC. You can find JB, who's currently sick, at JB_DRSC, and Chizo with Z_DRSC. But yeah, the game's launching, so it's back into Twitter season. I've been pretty quiet for the last...
6 months.
Yeah, a long time now. I can't remember when was the last time I tweeted. Yeah, not for a long time. So yeah, no, it's Supercoach season, so there'll be more tweets. Survivor season, so unfortunately there'll be some of those tweets. Apologies in advance. But yeah, looking forward to a great 2023 for all of us.
All right. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you do want to check out our Patreon, it's patreon.com/DrSupercoach or drsupercoach.com.au to get some merch. We'll catch you all in the next episode.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.